Hi, this is Bill Arnold. Missed a show or need me talking to help you sleep tonight? I have several solutions to that situation. Here are the podcasts from the show. You are the best for listening and supporting Faith Radio.
Mornings at 11 on Faith Radio.
And a warm welcome to Afternoons with Me. I'm Bill Arnold. I am so glad that we have this time together. I always look forward to it. I pray for you as I know you're climbing into your car. Maybe you're just getting off work. Maybe you are just busy about your day and getting ready for this evening. But either way, I love that you tune in and I love that we can hang out together. Life, love, romance, marriage. That's what we're going to talk about this hour. It's going to be fantastic. We're going to be taking the phone calls and the text questions. We've got Bob and Cheryl Moeller in studio today, and they've written a book called The Six Hearts of Intimacy, Enjoy Deeper Love and Passion in Marriage. And I think we all have a heart where we give and receive love, and then when you're young, some damage happens. By 80% happens by age 18, so you've got a damaged heart. And then you put two people with damaged hearts together and they marry and there's going to be problems and pain and they're going to help you process some of the things you might be struggling with and some of the questions you might have. We're going to open up the phone lines, not right away, but get your questions ready because we're going to bring Bob and Cheryl onto the show and get things started after 60 seconds. So thanks for being with me.
Because you give, a husband and wife find hope to start fresh. Because you give, a friend finds boldness to share God's truth, and a life is saved. Because you give, you can grow deeper in God's Word, and your life is changed. Because you give, Faith Radio continues to be a beacon of light, connecting faith to life. Faith Radio is listener-supported, and our financial year ends at the end of the month. Will you be a part? You can give today at myfaithradio.com.
Philippians 4:8 says, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. But it can be difficult to focus on these things when you're going about your day. Start each day with the verse of the day to focus your mind on the right things. Each day we'll send you a short Bible verse to encourage and uplift you. Sign up for the verse of the day online at myfaithradio.com under the subscriptions tab.
It is 6 minutes after the hour. Bob and Cheryl Moeller are my guests. They're authors and speakers. They have a marriage ministry, and they've been doing it for a long time. They actually met in after college and seminary, and they were united in marriage more than 30 years ago, and they both committed their lives to Christ at a young age. And Bob actually grew up here in Minnesota, and they founded For Better, For Worse, For Keeps Ministries to encourage couples in marriage. And it's also, they have a lot of ministries. It's called keepsministries.com. There we go. Bob and Cheryl, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill.
Cheryl?
Thank you so much.
So nice to have. I just let my listeners know, Cheryl, you're on your phone at home, and Bob's here in the studio. So I got both of you here in spirit.
Yes.
So thank you.
Yes. Bob went early a few days before me to the Twin Cities and visiting. We have quite a few relatives up there, so he's been seeing different people, including his brother. And we are going to be reunited after a couple days this week. In Stillwater this weekend because it's our 40th wedding anniversary, and there is nothing like the clean waters of Minnesota.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, yep. It was 40 years ago. In fact, we had a tornado the day of our wedding, if I remember, in June of 1979, and the sirens blew and everything else, and we had an early afternoon wedding. So I think there were people still in the basement, you know, instead of coming to our wedding. And we know that there is probably toasters and other appliances. We are still old, so we're coming up here to collect.
I think that's smart. like that. Well, let's start with talking about how I introduced the segment about the heart is where we give and receive love, but most of us have a damaged heart. Would you speak to that?
It's true. Let's start with the heart is given to us by God. We're made in His image. He has a heart, and He has given us a heart. Scripture uses the term heart 900 times, and only a few times to refer to how we circulate our blood, our oxygen. The rest is where we give and receive love. And two things will damage a heart early on in life, sin and pain. Sin is the choices we make that we shouldn't, and we're born with a sinful nature, and we do make sinful choices that can harden our heart. But most of it, at least I found among Christian couples we have, is due to pain. That's what someone else has done to us. And so sin can be forgiven, but pain has to be healed because pain is not a sin. You can't confess it. You can't repent of it. It has to be healed. And one of our anchor verses for this approach to healing marriages and restoring them is Isaiah 61, which was a prophecy regarding the ministry of Christ some 600 years before he lived. I'll just read a couple of verses. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. That's that our sins can be forgiven, the good news. But as a pastor, for many years, I didn't see the second part of this. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted. And without that understanding that not only do we need our sin forgiven, we need our pain healed, we need our heart, our broken heart restored, you can't really see marriage as fully restored. Proverbs 4:23 says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Jesus said, what's the most important commandment? You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart. From the heart, he said, comes the issues of life. So what happens is couples come to marriage because they may have an abandoned heart. A parent walked out when they were a child. They may have a rejected heart. They grew up feeling that they weren't wanted or accepted. They might grow up with a defiled heart because they were abused. And the end result is they're not able to give and receive love. A wall is built in their heart. And when they marry somebody with a wall, which I think 85% of people do, 15% are blessed to come to adulthood without this damaged heart. The other 85% of us have to somehow overcome this. And that we have found working with couples is transformational. Most of the time, we deal with fruit issues when people come, you know, for help. We're fighting. We argue about finances. Sex is, you know, an issue. Well, those are a problem, but they're not the problem.
So when you say fruit, you're regarding those as fruit.
Yeah, they're the manifestation of a broken heart. What broke their heart is the root underneath the tree. Harder to see, harder to identify. But if you do and you restore the roots, the fruit will take care of itself.
Okay. Give us a couple of examples.
Okay. Let's say a man has a pornography problem. And obviously lust is part of that and sin. We can all get that. That's not debatable. But how did he get into that? Why was he drawn to it? And let me be very clear to your listeners, this is an explanation, not an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a difference. Scripture never excuses sinful behavior, and some people never go there who have the same damage. But it is a route that people go to self-medicate. And we've had couples come to us where he has an addiction. But then when you listen to his life story and what happened to him as a child, his father left, and then the dysfunction in his life with his mother and whatever, and then at age 12, 13, some friends introduce him to some material, that all of a sudden the power of pornography self-medicates that pain, and he finds himself eventually addicted. And even though he marries, and even though every other aspect of his marriage should be fulfilling and is, he's still addicted. Well, the reason is not his wife's fault or, you know, whatever. He's still trying to deal with that pain. Well, you resolve the pain. You let God in his word, you let Jesus bring healing, the Isaiah 61, binding up the broken heart. And I'm not making this up. I'm just sort of drawing from some different examples. The addiction ends and it ends right now, and it doesn't return.
Now, you talked about like a younger boy who had an alcoholic dad, too. That was another example. I would love for you to elaborate on a little.
Children who grow up in alcoholic homes live with several things, emotional abuse, verbal abuse. They may see their mother being beaten or, you know, any variety of things, boyfriends coming through the place, you know, that are drunk and pass out. And as a result, their heart gets damaged. And they become fearful. They become anxious. They can't trust anybody. Their image of God is distorted as a father, and so they go out desperately looking for love, desperate to find this security that they never knew as a child. And they meet somebody that they think can fulfill that. And often, kids from those kinds of damaged homes will get into relationships way too quickly and way too deeply. Because they're trying to fix their issue, and that's their fix. But then they discover that they step on each other's pain, as we call it. Each finds the other's broken heart, steps on it, and then they get into a cycle of conflict, and it goes down from there.
And you also gave an illustration of how the other person might be more responsive to this person, how you were speaking to the 7-year-old boy.
Well, that's part of what we do with couples. We have them come for 5 days, 3 hours a day. Mm-hmm. It's a very intensive type of intervention. And what we do is we help them to discover what it is that wounded each other's hearts. And it's not 10 or 12 things. It's usually 2 or 3 primary things. And when you understand your spouse's pain and where it came from, you can start caring for it instead of stepping on it. Mm. And when you start caring for their heart in the area in which they've been wounded, their pain starts to go away. 50% of it will go away when their spouse starts caring for their hurt and they start trusting each other. They start being drawn to one another. And this isn't, Bill, this isn't hours and hours every day. This is 10 minutes of taking your wife's hands and saying, you know something, I want to care about the heart of that little girl. Now, she's a big girl now, but that little girl whose daddy walked out and who never said goodbye and said he was coming to get her, but she stood at the window and he never showed up on the days he said. These are stories we've been told, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know what? I wish I had been there. I wish I could have cared about you. I would have shown up and I would have said, you shouldn't leave this little girl. Mm-hmm. She's very precious.
I need to take a little break, but we've got Bob and Cheryl Mueller on the studio lines today. Bob's in studio. We're going to talk about the 6 hearts of intimacy. If you want more passion in your marriage, we're going to talk about the 6 hearts of intimacy, your romantic heart, your worshiping heart, your companion heart. There's just a little tease. We'll be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. I've got Bob and Cheryl Mueller as guests today. They've written a book called 6 Hearts of Intimacy, Enjoy Deeper Love and Passion in Marriage. I would love to take your calls if you've got a call about marriage, intimacy, love, romance. These folks are the experts. And I want to talk about the 6 Hearts of Intimacy. And Cheryl, maybe you would start with your romantic heart.
Yes, we found these in the scriptures, and some of them, many of them more than one time, but the romantic heart, it just seemed to us, so many people have told us that, you know, the husband as the fiancé or boyfriend was just so creative, like thought of places to go and had really nice cards and gifts and remembered everything. And then he gets married and it kind of like he stops doing all of that. He stops doing kind of the dating and courting. And so it leaves those wives where of the 6 hearts, let's say, if the husband or wife, but let's say it's her top one, that is going to leave her not really feeling loved. So we're big proponents of Dr. Gary Chapman's five love languages, and he endorsed the book and is our biggest supporter. And what we have done is in the back of the book and also on our website for keepsministries.com is a test, an inventory, a quiz you can take, and it also grades it online for you where you can tell maybe what your top three hearts are.
And the romantic heart, you see, God is a romantic, believe it or not. We don't often see him in that category, but you can't read the Song of Solomon without coming in. If you believe it's inspired, inerrant, as I do, then God spoke this through the writer. Let me quote Song of Songs, Song of Solomon 4:16 and 5:1. Let my lover come into his garden and taste its choice fruits. I've come into my garden, my sister. I have gathered my myrrh and my spice. I've eaten my honeycomb and my honey. I have drunk my wine and my milk. Well, you know, that's romantic language,
mm-hmm.
any way you look at it. And we say the romantic heart gives and receives love by connecting with our eyes. Romance is all about eye connection. You know, two people very much in love are looking at each other. It's stirring our spouse's imagination. Romance is imagination with our words. And it is creating closeness by our time alone together. It's a simple formula for romance. Connect with your eyes, stir imagination with your words, create closeness by being together. And imagination is sort of the key to all that. And so in the book, we suggest the romantic heart, as Cheryl just said, is vital to women. For many men, it's a little bit on the optional side. She's right. You know, when you're dating and courting, guys are thinking of all these creative things, the way to propose, everything, and then they get married and it kind of go flatline. You know, and then the romance.
They're all
things.
Sales and marketing in the beginning.
Yeah, exactly. And the women are going, you know, how did Don Juan become Rip Van Winkle? You know, I mean, I don't understand the mm-hmm. transition here. But we went to the internet to find some romantic things you could say to your wife, particularly if she's the one who has a need for that. Guys, somebody else has done the heavy lifting for us, okay? And so, you know what? We don't have to come up with this all. I'm just going to give you two or three romance lines to use. Okay.
Is this for real?
This is for real.
Okay.
Say, guys listening, say this to your wife tonight. See what happens. Okay. Last night I looked up at the stars and matched each one with the reason why I love you. I was doing great till I ran out of stars. Okay. Try that one. Okay. Here's the second one. I sent an angel to watch over you last night. The angel came back a minute later. He said, angels don't watch other angels. Okay. And here's one more. If I had to choose between breathing and loving you, I would use my last breath to say I love you.
Okay.
Now, not many of us. That I'm not writing that kind of stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, not while I'm operating heavy machinery or whatever. Mm-hmm. But somebody else has done it for me. My point is, connect with your eyes. That's what we do to see hearts healed, is we have them hold hands and look into each other's eyes and say these things that we were talking about in the first segment. And they begin to connect with each other, and they begin to feel drawn to each other. And romance isn't just endless Frank Sinatra, you know, songs playing on the loop. Romance is two people that find themselves mysteriously drawn to each other, and with it, imagination runs wild in a positive way, in I might even say a godly way.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a romantic heart. By the way, for each of these hearts, Bill, we have a counterfeit that is at work in our society today. And the counterfeit to the romantic heart is the detached heart, where I don't feel anything. I've shut down my emotions because I've gotten hurt so many times, I've decided I won't feel anything. And that includes saying anything romantic to my spouse or feeling anything. And I go through life thinking I'm in pretty good shape because I'm very stable, when actually I'm flatline.
Hmm.
Actually, I've shut down my emotions because they got overloaded with pain. And so if you're married to the detached heart, it's the opposite of the romantic. But if God heals that detached heart, I have seen romance burst up like, you know, kerosene, you know, in a refinery. It just, oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it's a very flammable liquid.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. What is the web address for that quiz?
It's forkeepsministries.com.
Forkeepsministries.com, okay.
Yes, so keeps is plural and ministries is plural.
Okay.
And there's several places there where you can see to click it, and you just click it in and take it, and then real quickly it grades it for you so you can see your top three. And we did that because on the to do it in the back of the book is kind of awkward because you can't lend it to a friend or, you know, have it laying around.
Have your kids read it. No,
right,
no,
of course.
Probably want to keep it.
All right, let's keep talking about the six hearts of intimacy. What about your worshiping heart? Who wants to tackle that one?
Well, let me jump in if I can, and Cheryl can certainly add to it. Of all the hearts, this is the most important one in my mind, because what it does is it recognizes the presence of God in our marriage. I have come after all these years, 40 years of marriage and all these years of being involved in marriage ministry, to believe that marriage is primarily a spiritual relationship. It's other things, but it's primarily spiritual. You see, marriage is the only relationship God ever said mirrors Christ in the church. There's no other relationship that he said, this is like Christ and this is the church. And he says this is a mystery in Ephesians chapter 5. And a mystery is something only God can know, but he's willing to tell us. So worship, well, marriage begins in the Garden of Eden. It starts there. First relationship is a marriage. And by the way, archaeologists have discovered where Adam and Eve lived. The Garden of Eden, their address, it was 281 Apple. All right. You know, to get a comedian to laugh is a great compliment.
As a courtesy chuckle, by the way.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Well, the neighbors did call the police. It seems they were raising Cain. Yeah. Tip your waitress on the way out.
Yeah, exactly. I'm here all week. Enjoy the veal.
Okay.
Yeah.
History is interrupted with a wedding. Jesus does his first miracle at the wedding of Cana of Galilee. Mm-hmm. Well, why? Where every other venue booked, he couldn't get anything else that day. He only had the wedding. No, it was because a marriage relationship is so sacred and important. And by the way, history ends with a wedding.
Yeah.
Marriage Supper Lamb.
Yeah.
So we create mystery in our marriage by acknowledging the presence of God.
We're having a lot of fun with Bob and Cheryl Mueller. We're talking about the book called The Six Hearts of Intimacy, Enjoy Deeper Love and Passion in Marriage. We are able to take calls. We also have six books to give away. So if you would like to get in the drawing to win one of the books, email me, bill@myfaithradio.com, and just type in the subject line, Six Hearts. Make sure you put your name and address if you are the lucky winner. We need to know where to send it. We'll take a short break and be back with more in a minute. Welcome back to the show. Marriage experts Bob and Cheryl Mueller are my guests. They present biblically based and proven ways to enhance your relationship with your spouse as they describe the romantic heart, the giving heart, the guardian heart. We got all kinds of ones. Let's go to the companion heart. Who wants to start with that, Cheryl?
Well, the companion heart really comes down to friendship, which hopefully was started at the beginning of the friendship that started and through the dating and courtship. And that companion heart is something that women seem to know before the wedding, how to be that companion, and, you know, whatever is offered, they go for it and say, sure, yeah, let's do that, I'll do that. And then afterward, it's a lot easier to start thinking about saying no to opportunities, and what they actually do want is to be with their husband. And it's like, we love boating and fishing, especially in Minnesota lakes. But I definitely have discovered when you're fishing with your husband, he can't get too far away from you. So it definitely works.
Yeah, it's becoming, let me give our definition. We give and receive love through creating deep soul ties, becoming best of friends, showing undying devotion. And men need a companion, I believe, even more than women. I mean, studies show that if a husband loses his wife to death, or let's start with a wife who becomes a widow, or 80% of them will remain single. The rest of it, according to insurance actuarial tables, 80% of widows remain single. Widowers, men, 75% of those will remarry in within 2 years. Men do not do well. The Bible said it is not good for man to be alone. And most men, this is the secret that's I'm revealing, I'm speaking, I'm violating the male fraternity here for a moment. Most men are lonely. Most married men are lonely in the sense that they don't have one close friend, and their wife goes, how can you be lonely? I have all sorts of friends, everywhere I have friends, I'm connected. Well, he knows people and he's got some, acquaintances, but studies say most men don't have one close friend. The companion heart says, I will be my husband's buddy. I will do things with him that other men used to do with him. And Cheryl was right. She said, when you were dating and he invited you, to a Twins game or to the Vikings, you went. And you didn't care about football and maybe you didn't even like baseball, but you liked sitting next to him. You liked having his arm around you or that blanket around the two of you when you're outdoors somewhere in a stadium or whatever. But yeah, you get married. No, I've got to take care of the kids. I've got laundry to do. I've got to, get rid of this. And the husband's left lonely. Believe it or not, most men, I ask men's groups this all the time when I do a men's retreat. I said, how many of you wish your wife would watch the game with you? And I mean, out of 100 men, 98 hands go up. And then sometimes when it's a mixed group, their wives are along, they look at each other and go, what? I'll go, men, how many of you wish she'd ride with you when you go to put gas in at Super America or Holiday or something? All the men's hands go up. What? I thought you wanted to be alone. I thought you liked being this individual, this rugged guy, on his own. No. Deep inside, they're lonely. I mean, why do you think men take the dog with them where they're going? Okay. It's not because the dog's going to help them find, look for directions. They'd rather have the dog in the car than be alone. And I say at marriage conferences, ladies, why don't you replace the dog? Well, I could say it better. Okay, there's a better way to say that than what I just said.
Well, and Bob really likes dogs, so
yeah, I guess that's the other thing. But Cheryl, tell them about when we went goose hunting.
Well, we went out to a state preserve in western Minnesota, and we stayed in one of these no-tell motels, and every other room were, filled with three or four or five guys, and then it was Bob and I. They were rowdy, and I'm not sure we went to sleep before 2 a.m. But the next morning then, we were in the beautiful, foggy Minnesota morning.
We were in a pit.
Okay.
At 5 a.m. or 5:30. And I thought, life doesn't get better than this. I have my gun. I have my hot coffee. I have my geese that are honking and circling above me. And I have my babe with me. And Cheryl was shivering and saying, would you shoot something so we could go home? Well, I want you to know no animals were injured in the telling of this story. Okay, nothing. I missed everything. But why do I remember that 25 years later? Because Cheryl was my buddy.
Right. All right, we've got three down with three to go, but I'd like to take a little halftime here and just ask some more general questions. To talk about the impact of our families of origin, maybe witnessing our parents' marriages, How has that affected us as kids going off and getting married?
Well, it affects us in a huge way. I don't think there's any bigger impact on our hearts than the home we grew up in and what we saw in our parents' marriage, and how they dealt with all sorts of issues, whether they were connected or not. And what we have both found through the years is if you came from a home where there was fighting, there was arguing, there was division, there was addiction, there was abuse, there was divorce, there was abandonment, there was infidelity, there was detachment, there was any of these things, 90% of us grow up to marry our most difficult parent if our hearts are not healed first. Mm. We will marry our most difficult parent. We will find someone that mimics their behavior. We will be drawn to it. We will marry that person, and then we'll be angry about it for years to come. And there is hope for that, by the way, if you married your most difficult parent. The hope is that God can heal your pain, and he can forgive your sin, and he can restore your hearts, and you two can give each other what you never received growing up. But I have people tell me, we do their life story. We listen for 3 hours to a husband and then to a wife. 3 hours. Tell us your earliest recollections up till today. And inevitably, somewhere in that 3 hours, one or both of them start to cry because they get to the hurt. They get to the pain of this event or that event. And that's when they found their heart. They may have locked it away for years. One man said he had a heart that was concrete with reinforced rebar steel, mm-hmm. you know, that it was just as solid rock as it could be. But I've seen the bigger they are, the harder they fall
mm-hmm.
When they find their heart. And their wife looks at them and hears their story, and they hear their wife's story, and suddenly their heart begins to soften toward each other. You mean that happened to you in your home? You mean you went through that? I never knew that. And Bill, that's one of the most surprising things is to hear couples married 30 years who say, you never told me that story. I never knew that. And
why not, Bob? Is it because if I told you that story, you might not like me or want to marry me?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. It may be so painful. You have buried it, suppressed it, locked it away, thought it was in the past. Or you may just be scared to even talk about it because it's so difficult.
Yeah. Let me ask you this question, and I'm going to tie it in with a question that just came in from a listener. Let's talk about counterfeit hearts. First of all, describe, if you would, what they are. And if you uncover a counterfeit heart, how are you able to find a deeper, intimate connection with each other?
Well, maybe I'll let Cheryl tackle what a counterfeit heart
is. Okay, Cheryl.
Well, a counterfeit heart is really the before healing, let's say, the BH heart, or the opposite of what healthy looks like. And, for instance, in the romantic heart, the counterfeit heart is detached, which truly is like a huge transponder for the whole neighborhood just going out. And that's what it's like living with somebody who has a detached heart.
Yeah, it's like plugging too many things into a wall socket and the circuit breaker goes
mm-hmm.
and everything goes dark. And when people are overloaded. So, yeah, counterfeit hearts are the opposite of what we need. But because of our hurt and our pain, we often default to that. That's where we end up. In our relationship, like the opposite of the companion heart is the conditional heart. The conditional heart says we'll remain loyal and friends just as long as it works for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that's the working understanding among most live-in couples today. Couples that are living together don't know it often, but they're living out the conditional heart, which is we will stay in this relationship as long as it works for us.
Mm-hmm.
But when one or the other of us is not working anymore, I'm out of here. And there were no commitments and there is no signed anything, so I can just exit when I'm ready. And we settle for the counterfeit heart because we've never known anything different. and we had to settle for it as children, maybe in our home. And so it's as close as we think that we can get to it. But, you know, the conditional heart, I've seen it do so much damage, as opposed to the companion heart that says, for as long as we both shall love, instead of as long, or live, instead of as long as we both shall love.
Right. A question from a listener says, what do I do when intimacy is pretty much non-existent in marriage and a spouse that is completely satisfied with how things are?
Well, I think in that situation, it starts by not trying to address the problem itself. That's the fruit on the tree.
Okay.
You're going to have to get to the root of the tree. Why has he or she lost interest completely in this? There can be several explanations for it. There usually isn't one. But let me just start with, well, there is. They have a damaged heart. Okay. And in some cases, if they were sexually abused, they only see, as a child or teenager, they only see sex as violation. They struggle to see it as intimacy. Number two, often if there's a pornography problem, they're finding their fulfillment, if you will, somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Number three, they may be angry at one another and haven't really identified that yet. We have what's called the emotional pain ladder. It's the progression of pain in our hearts if it's not healed. And we'll address this question, but it is an answer to it. When our hearts are hurt, that's rung one on the 12-step ladder. Hurt leads to pain. If it's not resolved, it becomes painful. Painful leads to frustration because the pain doesn't go away. Frustration leads to anger. Anger leads to depression and anxiety, and that is often where there's anger and depression, the sexual relationship can suffer. You go up the pain ladder from anxiety, you stop talking. You don't tell each other what's going on in your hearts. Then the next rung is you pull away from relationships. That can be an explanation why there's no sex in the marriage, mm-hmm. is they have pulled away from one another. After that, you start making impulsive, you lose your identity. You don't know who you are anymore. Next rung. Because when you pull away from relationships, you lose the ability to identify yourself. Then you start making impulsive decisions to try and rescue. That can be addictions, to try and heal your pain. That leads to despair, rung 11, and 12 can be suicidal thoughts. Okay? Mm. So you went from hurt to suicidal thoughts. Everybody doesn't go up the same ladder, the same speed, but somewhere in this marriage, they are on the pain ladder, both of them. Now, here's the good news. If you're on rung 6 or you're rung on 9 or rung 3, you don't have 9 problems, 11 or 3, you only have one to solve. What's the hurt? You resolve the hurt, the other 11 collapse on top of it because that's what sent you up. So in this case, they need to have, maybe with the help of someone else, a counselor or whatever, they need to talk about what has hurt and damaged their heart, not only recently, but way, way back. And when they begin to discover what hurt them way, way back, and realize, hey, you know, that's happening right now as well in one form or another, isn't it? I think 90% of the time it is. Well, what if we address that? I mean, Bill, I've had people come to me who haven't been intimate in 6 months or 2 years or whatever, and they're fine with it, supposedly. But they're not fine because God made us for intimacy in marriage, according to Genesis 2:24. We are to become intimate. But anyway, when they get their hearts healed, like Thursday out of this week, they'll come to me, the next morning and go, Pastor Bob, I want to tell you about last night. And I'll go, no, you don't. I don't want to know about it.
Yeah.
You don't have to describe anything. I'm fine. I get the idea. That's TMI. That's way too much information for me. So let's not go there. But let's just say things are different. And they both smile and say, they're different.
Nice. Let me take a little break. Bob and Cheryl Moeller are my guests. The book that I have in my hand, that I have several copies to give out, if you'd like to get into the drawing for one of them, send me an email, bill@myfaithradio.com, and put in the subject line 6 hearts. And make sure you leave your name and address, so if you are one of the lucky winners, we'll know where to send it. We'll take a short break and be right back. Oh, this hour is going way too fast. Bob and Cheryl Moeller are my guests, and their book is called The 6 Hearts of Intimacy, Enjoy Deeper Love and Passion in Marriage. And, boy, I don't know how I want to best spend my last 12 minutes. I, I, I want to talk about the question is maybe if the spark begins to dim, can you restore passion to your marriage? And obviously the answer is yes, but maybe you could offer some first steps
that they could take on tonight. Sure, I would love to start that answer. And that would be, we have a lot of really cool stories. We're able to sit on the front seat every week and see God do a miracle. One couple just absolutely no passion at all. And she finally admitted that she had been sexually abused at church by someone in the church growing up. And she just absolutely had not told her fiancé that, but now they're married, and she just really has no interest. So she read Six Hearts of Intimacy and saw that intimacy is so much more even than the physical act. And by these different hearts, we talk about them, that, you know, it is companionship, it is worshiping, it is the giving heart, the guardian heart, romantic. And she just changed. She did a 180, and that was about a year ago. They have a 3-month-old little baby boy today. And she said she had only, and I know there's much, much more, let's say, and she did get help. Once she admitted it and then read this book, she got some personal Christian counseling. But my point is that she saw it as so many, like a diamond, so many different points besides only physical. Yeah. And we've also seen so many people come to Christ because they kind of read all this, and if they don't have a personal relationship with Christ, they're like, wow, like, I would need one. I need to be close to God to let all of this happen to me, let me happen to all of this. And they just really soften their hearts towards the Lord.
Yeah, we have found many people realize at the end of the day, I need God to forgive, and I need Jesus to speak to my broken heart. And that leads people who are not believers and others to realize for the first time in their life, you know what, I need the presence of the loving God who can do both of these things. You know, Bill, it's real interesting in Luke chapter 4, the very first sermon Jesus preaches in Nazareth is, he's quoting Isaiah 61. The Spirit of the Lord is on me to bind, to preach good news and to bind up the brokenhearted. Mm-hmm. Out of all the Old Testament he could choose, that's his text for his first sermon. I think that says something.
Sure does. Yeah, so the brokenheartedness. So if a man and a woman, let's just talk genders now for a minute, is there one or the other that has a more difficult time with a damaged heart in a marriage relationship? Is the guy more underground and the woman more willing to want to talk and work through things, or how does that work?
Maybe initially, but what we tell couples when they come to us is that, we're not going to judge anyone here. I don't judge anyone that comes to me. Now you're going, well, what, do you have any standards? No, I said I don't judge people. I judge behavior as good or bad, because mm-hmm. Scripture does, but I don't judge people. Why don't I judge people? Well, Scripture says not to, but also I've never lived their life. I haven't had their pain and their experiences, so how could I say I would turn out better than they would mm-hmm. had I been them? So we first of all, take away the judgment factor of that. But I'll tell you how you get a man to talk, and I hope wives are listening to this. You can get any man to talk, but it's not the way you get a woman to talk. Women play ping pong. They're naturally verbal. I'm generalizing, but it's generally true. They go back and forth. Mm-hmm. You get two women at Starbucks, they're doing ping pong before you know it. Mm-hmm. We men are watching. You get three women, it's three-way ping pong. You get four, it's doubles now, okay? And we're getting dizzy watching them all talking at once, but understanding each other and adding to it. Men don't play ping pong, they play catch. You throw the ball to a man, he holds it till he's ready to throw it back. And when he's ready, he tosses it back. We men understand that instinctually.
Mm-hmm.
Two men can go to a sports game, ride home from it. Nobody says anything for 30 minutes in the car. And you're not looking at the other guy thinking, I wonder if he's mad at me. No, there's nothing to say, so you don't say it. Here's how you get men to talk. You ask them a non-threatening, non-judgmental question, and you listen. And when they answer it, you don't say anything except you smile and say, mm-hmm. And you wait until they say something more. And you go, mm-hmm. And eventually, when they see you're not going to criticize, evaluate, push back, judge, whatever, they start telling you more and more and more. And pretty soon, they're talking. And I've had so many wives turn to their husband and say, you haven't said this much to me in 2 years. Why have you just spent 3 hours talking to this man? And I'll answer respectfully, because I listen. And James says, my dear brothers, take note of this. All of us should be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to get angry. But we in marriage do the opposite. We're very quick to get angry. We're very quick to speak, and we're very slow to listen. But you listen to a man, and by listening, I mean you don't interrupt, evaluate, judge, push back, evaluate, or amend, and you even allow for dead air. Now, if here in the studio, some equipment failed and there was dead air for 30 seconds or a minute, listeners might go away.
They'd go, oh, that's Bill's show.
But in marriage, dead air is okay with a man. Don't be threatened by it. Give him that time of silence when you ask him a fair question, and he will give you an answer. And then if you go, mm-hmm. And the only question you ask him is clarifying question. So tell me more. What happened after that? What did that do? He eventually will start talking to you, and he will walk you to the door of his heart. It may take an hour and a half. It may take two. But he will take you to what has wounded him, and then you two can connect.
Wow. It's been a fast hour in radio. Bob, this and Cheryl, this has been fascinating, and I love this book and the material. We've got 6 copies to give away. If you'd like to get in the drawing to win one of them, here's what you do. Bill at myfaithradio.com, and in the subject, just put 6 hearts, and make sure you put your name and address so we can make sure we get it sent to you if you are one of the lucky winners. So we've just got about a minute left. This book is got a interesting quiz in the back, which you can take. And the online quiz is at, once again, for keeps.
Yeah, sure. I'll give them that address again.
Ministries.com.
Okay. We'd love to have you back. This has been a great hour. And
thank you very
lots
much.
Of good questions. And this has been fascinating. We will take a short break and fire up with hour 2. Representative Susan Humphreys is going to be in my studio. It's going to be a great hour as well. We'll take a short break and be right back.
Struggle to believe that you're really forgiven? Hear this from Pastor Greg Laurie from A New Beginning.
Let me say this to you on the authority of God's word. If you have asked God to forgive you of that sin and you have repented of that sin, you are forgiven, okay? Well, Greg, you don't have the power to absolve people. No, but God does, and he has forgiven you of every sin that you've confessed and turned from. So accept that. God says there are sins and iniquities, well, I remember no more. But often we'll dig those sins up and go over them again and beat ourselves up over it. Here's the thing we need to remember. We should not choose to remember what God has chosen to forget. You have been forgiven of your sin.
We're living by faith together on Faith Radio.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.